Who do you have in your life that's looking out for you spiritually? Who do you have in your life that can see blind spots? Who do you have in your life that will call you out when you're doing wrong? Life groups are intentional. Now, I remember when I first heard the term small group, I was a little confused as to what it was all about. But then I realized I had a small group before there were small groups. Part of the reason why I'm preaching today that I have grown spiritually the way I have grown is in my 20s when our kids were being born, I got together with three or four of guys that were of like-minded faith. These were guys that I went to church with. And we first got together on Fridays because that was when that was their slow time. And I just happened to have a job that I could take off quite a bit of time. And I took time off and I drove down to where they were downtown. And we met at this Cuban restaurant and we had lunch together. And at first we had lunch together and all we did is we talked about sports and jobs and raising kids and things like that and what was going on with our kids and all the different things. And we started sharing, and then one day, and I don't remember how long it took, but one day one of the guys came in and he said, "Neil, I have a spiritual question for you." And I began to teach these guys. What was really interesting about it is their questions weren't always easy, and these are guys that grew up in the church and that had some Bible knowledge, and they wanted to know more and more about the Bible, but more than that, they wanted to know what was the biblical way to handle things that were going on in their life. And now, as they shared, I shared, and when we started growing together, we became very close, and we met together every week for a number of years. Now, all of those friends have left and gone other places, and I don't even stay in contact with them anymore. But I will tell you this most certainly, if it were not for those friends, I would not be standing in front of you today. So when I'm talking to you about life groups, I'm talking to you from somebody that has a passion for those kinds of relationships. And most of us don't realize we need those relationships. Most of us would say, you know, I'm okay doing that life the way I'm doing it right now. I don't need any close brothers or sisters to help me out because, you know, I'm not doing anything really bad. But it's not about not doing anything bad. It's about growing in your faith. It's growing in your understanding. It's growing in the way you do life. And that's the reason why we call them life groups. You see, deep down inside of all of us, we all have, and this is your first blank, a longing for belonging. We all have a longing for belonging. There's something innate in all of us. There's something that God put in all of us that we want to have people in our lives. Now, some of you are like me. You're more gregarious. You're more outgoing. You never meet a stranger. My kids used to get upset with me because we would go to a restaurant and they would say to me, "Dad, do you know somebody here?" And I would always say to them, "No, I don't, but before we leave, I will." Because that's my personality. And if you don't have that personality, it's okay. You're still going to want those people. I was talking to a friend recently, and he said, "I only need three or four people in my friend circle." And I was number five, so I couldn't get in. And that's the way some people are. You're not as gregarious as me, and that's okay. But everybody in this room has a longing for belonging. And if you're a member of the church, if you're a member of the body of Christ, I want you to look at what God's Word says in Romans chapter 12 and verse 5. It says, "We are all a part of it, and it takes every one of us to make it complete. For we each have different work to do." And I want you to underline these words. So we belong to each other, and each needs all the others. Now, I want you to just underline those words. This is from God Himself. He inspired the writer of Romans to say, we all belong to each other and we all need each other. There is a Zambian proverb that says, when you run by yourself, you run fast. But when you run together, you run far. And I like that because this is a race that we're in right now. This is a challenge. It's not about a sprint. You know, the Christian walk is not about sprinting and I just got to do this and get it done. It is a journey. It is a marathon that we're in right now, and we need each other. Acts chapter 2 and verse 46, most of you are familiar with Acts chapter 2 when the church started. In verse 46, it says, and underline these words, every day. Every day they continue to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts. Now, here's what I want you to get next. This is a commandment coming from 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 9. And for those of you who'd like to know more about 1 Peter, we're going to be starting a study next month in the 1 Peter. But one of the things it says there, and just underline these words, offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. Offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. The reason why I want you to underline those words is because we're going to need some more host homes from time to time. Richard Hammond's doing a great job helping lead us in life groups. And I know that one of the things that he is going to need down the road is more host homes. And so what I'm saying to you now is you need to think about how you can offer hospitality without grumbling. So, why do we need life groups? Why do we have to have life groups? Why do I need to be in life groups? Number one, we need one another because of loneliness. We need one another because of loneliness. I have a dear friend that is in prison, and one of the things he tells me is the cruelest punishment that they can give a prisoner is solitary confinement. Because you're all alone for the better part of the day. You get a little bit of time out, but you're all alone for the better part of the day. And the greatest epidemic that this country has ever had is not COVID. The greatest epidemic that this country has ever had is called loneliness. And COVID brought that loneliness out even more. We need each other because we need it to combat loneliness. The Lord God said, it is not good for man to be alone. Another way to translate that, God hates for people to be alone. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 16, from him the whole body joined and held together by every supporting ligament grows and builds itself up in love as each part does its work. Everybody, underline the words, builds itself up in love because everybody has a job to do. When it comes to life group, one of the things that I've heard people say is that I don't know that much Bible and I don't want to be embarrassed in a life group. You don't have to know a lot of Bible in order to be in a life group. And I've heard other people say, well, I don't think I can really add anything to that. That's not what the Bible is saying here. The Bible is saying that each one of us needs the other in order to be built up. Matthew chapter 18, 20 says, for where two or three come together in my name, there I am with them. God is telling us he is with us when we're in these small groups / life groups. And you need to understand that being a part of the church is not being a part of the crowd. Being a part of the church means that you're intimately involved in your brothers and sisters' lives. That means you know what makes people laugh. That means you know what makes people cry. There is no way for our elders to shepherd everybody in this room. There's no way. There's no way for the elders and the preachers to shepherd everybody in this room. They're doing a great job. They're trying their best. But there are so many of you and so few of us. And you need to understand that you need to rely on one another. And there's going to be times when you're going to need an elder. There's going to be times when you need a preacher. And we're going to be available for you. But in the day-to-day things, sometimes you just need another brother or sister in your life. Number two, we need one another to do ministry. Because if you do ministry by yourself, you get fatigued. One of the things that I have enjoyed with this particular eldership is being able to spend time with them, be able to work with them. One of the things that comes out of our elders meeting is not just the decisions that are made in the elders meeting, but the encouragement that we get from being with one another. At West Point, I was noticing on a video I saw the other day about West Point that was really interesting. At West Point, they feed 4,000 people a day, and they do it in 15 minutes. 4,000 people a day, and each meal 15 minutes, and they do it three times a day. And they showed the behind the scenes of what it takes to get that done. And here's what it takes to get that done. It takes teamwork. And they have to work together. And when something falls apart, somebody steps in to take care of it. Ecclesiastes chapter 4 and verse 9 says, two are better than one because they have a good return for their work. There is a book that I read several years ago. Maybe you might be familiar with it. It's an old book called Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. If you've ever read it or heard of it, raise your hand. Notice it's mostly old people. I'm just saying. Jason's not that old, but he's an old soul. But here's the thing. I read that book several years ago, and one of the things that stuck out in my mind is he's talking about the power of two people being together, working together. And there's modern day stuff, there's more current stuff, but he talks about this invisible talisman that comes along when two people are together trying to solve problems. And I've seen it happen more than not. When two people come together, their ideas are so much better than one by themselves. Ecclesiastes chapter 4 and verse 9 in the Living Bible says, two can accomplish more than twice as much as one, for the results can be much better. Now, I want you to look at this in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 10 through the Message Bible and underline these words, right now. Right now. There is an urgency to this. Therefore, every time we get the chance, let us work for the benefit of all, starting with the people closest to us in the community of faith. Underline the words right now and starting with the people closest to us in the community of faith. One of the things that I realize is that if you're a part of this church and you don't have any close relationships, if you don't have anybody that you look forward to seeing on Sunday morning, more than likely, you're going to leave this church within 6 months. Now, there are some people that are exception to that rule, and God love you if you're that way. But statistically speaking, if you don't make some close friends at a church, within 6 months, you're going to be going somewhere else or not going at all. And one of the things I want you to look at this verse right there where it says, starting with the people closest to us in the community of faith. I want you to ask this question. If you're new here, there's no reason to be ashamed. But if you've been here for some time, I want you to name three people that you feel like that you can call that you're close to in the community of faith. Name three people, and I'm not one of them. I don't count. You just get to see me every week. But my point being is, if you don't have any close relationships, life groups are the way to build those relationships. Number three, we need one another to look out for us. Because there's going to be times of defeat. There's going to be times where we're going to need somebody to help us through some bad times. I was thinking about this morning, and I was thinking about my neighborhood. And one of the things that I know that I can count on is I've got neighbors that will keep an eye out for the things that are going on at my house. I remember one time when my boys were still at home. It was before Matthew got married, so he was still in his 20s, just early 20s, and we were at the house, and I walked in the house, and they had the TV blaring, and everything was going on, and I walked in the house, and I said to him, turn the TV down, go get in the car, the last one in the car has to pay for the meal. And we just all scrambled out of the house to make sure we didn't. But what I didn't realize, because I had a head start, I knew what was going on. What I didn't realize is they didn't turn the TV off and they didn't shut the front door. And we went off for dinner for about an hour and a half. And my neighbor next door, who is an older guy, who's really confused about my house anyway and what goes on there, he came to me after we got home and he says, Neil, I don't know what happened, but I heard your TV and I saw your front door open and I came over and I turned your TV off and I yelled and nobody answered. I don't know if I stopped a robbery or what. We all need somebody to look out for us. I have a next door neighbor on the other side, and from time to time I will be doing something in the garage and I'll leave my garage door open. Does anybody else have that? I've done that several times, and he always calls or texts me and says, hey, Neil, I don't know if you're still up, but your garage door was wide open, and it's 11 o'clock at night. You see, we got people that live in our neighborhood that look out for us, but I want to ask you this question. Who's looking out for you spiritually? Who's looking out for you spiritually? I've got some great people in my life that look out for me spiritually. I have a friend that I call every so often, and his first words to me are, Neil, give me a fresh word from the Lord. He wants to make sure I'm still studying. Who do you have in your life that's looking out for you spiritually? Who do you have in your life that can see blind spots? Who do you have in your life that will call you out when you're doing wrong? It says here in Philippians chapter 2, each of you should not look, or should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. The Living Bible says it very well. Do not just think about your own affairs, but be interested in others too, in what they are doing. You see, we live in a society that says you shouldn't be bothering other people. Keep your nose out of their business. And I think sometimes that's a valid thing, that you need to keep your nose out of things. But I'm going to tell you, God put us on this earth to look out for each other. We have a lady who has dementia that lives right across the street from us. Her name is Veronica. Her husband died a few years ago. And the caretakers that come over, they're there 24/7. Every single one of them know that I'm keeping an eye out for Veronica. And anytime they have a problem, especially with the cable, I don't know why that is, they'll come to my house and they'll talk to me. And poor little old Veronica from time to time will get confused and they won't know what to do with her. And I come over and I talk her down, so to speak, for what she's confused about and let her know everything's going to be all right. We all need people like that in life, in our life. Ecclesiastes chapter 4 and verse 12 says, though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. He goes on to say before that, if one falls down, his friends can help him up, but pity the man who falls and has no one to help him up. One of the things you need to realize is if you're not running into the devil every day, is that means you're walking with him. And there's times when I've run into the devil and I need somebody to talk to because I'm like, why is this going on? And there's going to be times in your life where things are going to happen and you just don't see them happening. This morning we were on our way to church and there was a guy in front of us whose taillights were not working on his trailer that he was pulling. And I'm thinking, this guy thinks everything's working fine, but every time he made a turn, his taillights would go out. Now, I wish I could tell you the rest of the story is I pulled him over, told him his taillights weren't working, and he's in church today, but that didn't happen. But my point being is this, is we all need someone to tell us that our taillights are not working. Number four, we need one another to love because there's going to be suffering in this world. We live in a world that is broken, and because we live in a broken world, I don't care how good it's going now, one day you're going to experience some kind of tragedy. Some of you have already experienced that tragedy in many different ways. It could be the loss of somebody that you love, that you're close to. It could be financial strain. It could be a health issue you're dealing with right now. But there's going to be a time you're going to need to have somebody in your life that can share in your suffering. I remember when I first started preaching and I went to the hospital and I've got to tell you, nobody told me how to do hospital visits. Nobody told me what to do. I knew I had to pray because, you're a preacher. You pray on command, that kind of thing. But I really didn't know what to do, and I went in there, and I sat down with a woman as her husband was having open-heart surgery, and I just sat with her until it was over and he was in the clear and she could go back and see him. And we didn't talk a whole lot. There was a little bit of conversation. There were some prayers. I said a prayer at the beginning, and then I said a prayer halfway through with her because she was like, Neil, will you say another prayer? I'm worried about him. And I said another prayer. And they came, and they said, everything went great. He's doing great. We're taking him back to a room. You can be back in a few minutes. And she gave me a big hug, and she said to me, Neil, I cannot tell you what it means to me for you to be here because it was just me and her. And I looked at her and I said, well, I didn't do anything. And she said, yes, you did. You were here. And there's going to be times where you just need somebody to be there. Look at the passages of Scripture. I've got 1 Peter chapter 3. Finally, all of you live in harmony with one another, be sympathetic, love as brothers, be compassionate and humble. 1 Corinthians 12:26, if one part suffers, then every part suffers with it. If one part is honored, every part is rejoicing or rejoices with it. One of the things you've got to understand is that we need people in our life to know when what makes us cry and to know what makes us happy. Romans 12:15, rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn. Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just as in fact you are doing. I heard recently about a man who was 2 years in his home dead before anybody discovered him. And I thought to myself, how in the world can somebody die and it takes 2 years for anybody to notice? He lived in a neighborhood. I looked it up online. He lived in a neighborhood and the houses were not that far apart. And they were talking to the neighbors and said, how come nobody said anything? And they said, well, he never came out of his house when he was alive. And what prompted this is the fact that the smell came and went. And one of the neighbors said, you know, it really smelled funny over there, but I really didn't want to get involved. And it was the postman, after 2 years of delivering his mail, decided that he ought to make a welfare check on the man. 2 years. Nobody wants to be alone. And number five, we need each other to seek, and those that are lost. You see, the Bible teaches us, and he teaches us really clear, by this all men will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. Not if you can speak clearly, but if you love one another. That's how people know that we're his disciples, is by the way we treat each other, the relationships we have with each other. You can't save the world by yourself. You need somebody to go with you. I can't tell you how many times I've been with somebody talking to someone, and I'm supposed to be the professional as far as teaching and converting, but someone that's with me will make a point that clicks with the person that I'm teaching, and it'll make all the difference in the world. You see, we need each other to seek the lost. 2 Timothy 1:7, for God did not give us the spirit of timidity, but a spirit of power, of love, and of self-discipline. In the Living Bible, it says, for the Holy Spirit, God's gift, does not want you to be afraid of people. Underline those words. Because all of us, in some way, are afraid of people. And I'm not talking about being afraid of Lance Baker, because he's a scary guy. I mean, you know, he's big, he wears a badge, he carries a gun. Oh, man, I tell you what. But I'm going to tell you this about Lance, because I know Lance. He's a teddy bear. He acts tough, but I can take him. And I can take him with a hug. All I have to do is hug Lance, and he melts. My point being is this, is some of you are afraid of relationships because you've been hurt in the past. Some of you are afraid because you don't know what other people are going to think about you. Well, let me just tell you this so you can remember this. People spend more time thinking about themselves than they ever think about you. It always shocks me when somebody says, I ran into the Rays, and it shocked me when I ran into them, and they said, well, we were just thinking about you, you and Nancy at Christmas, and I'm like, shocked. Why? Why were you thinking about me at Christmas? You got plenty going on right now. You're worried. You're fearful of what other people will think. You're fearful of being judged. You're fearful of how people will perceive you. Well, let me just explain this to you. Everybody in this room is weird. I'm serious. All of you are weird. You're weird in some way. I can tell you this, those of you I don't know very well, I just haven't figured out your weirdness yet. But the more time I spend with you, I'm going to figure out a way to know what makes you weird. And here's what's really cool for me. I like weird people. And when you get out of your insecurities and you recognize that everybody in this room is just as weird as you are, you're going to like weird people too. You're going to like people that are different. You're going to like people that have problems. You're going to like people who don't have it all together, because they're going to remind you that none of us have it all together. Philippians chapter 1, verse 27, whatever happens, conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel. I will know that you stand firm in one spirit, contending as one man for the faith of the gospel. We need each other to reach this lost world. And one of the best ways to do that is to have a life group that is seeker-friendly, that you can bring friends to, and you can learn more about them and share the gospel with them. I have one question for you before I give the invitation. And my question for you is one that I wish I had asked you sooner. But my question for you today is, who will be in heaven because of you? Who will be in heaven because of you? The Lord's invitation is always open. You can respond to it at any time, night or day. I love the phone call I got one time in the middle of the night. It was about 12:30 at night from a young man and his wife. I had studied with both of them. They both knew what the Bible said about baptism. And I went to this man's wife. I called her and said, "Hey, you know, I know we've studied together and you know what to do. Is there something else you need to know?" And she said to me, "Well, I'm just waiting on my husband." So I got in my car and I called him and I said, "Let's meet for lunch. I'm on my way." I took him to lunch. I sat down in front of him and I said to him, "What are you waiting on?" And he started giving me different excuses. And I finally looked at him and I said, "You mean your wife is going to go to hell because you're not ready to do what God calls you to do?" And I thought, if anything's going to make him mad, that's going to make him mad. And he was a big guy, too. But what I've learned is nobody has ever punched me for telling them God's truth. I've been punched for other reasons, but not for that. And we left that day, and I thought, I have failed miserably. 1 o'clock in the morning, maybe 12:31, somewhere in there, I get a call, and he says, "Neil, we're ready. Can we do this now?" And I woke Nancy up, and we came down here, and we baptized them. They're married and got two kids. They don't go to church here now, but I know they're going to be in heaven. Here's the thing. Who is it that's keeping you from obeying the gospel? But better yet, what is it that's keeping you from obeying the gospel? What is it that's keeping you from being a part of a family of believers that loves and cares for you? And if you're a part of this family, what's keeping you from being close to other people? I know that you know that I love you, but there's no way for me to get to everybody every week. You need each other, and life groups is a way to do it, but you've got to make a commitment to God first and foremost that you want to grow in His love and that you want to be a part of His family. And you want to make the rest of your life the best of your life. If there's any need in any way, will you come as we stand and sing?